Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, welcome into the Thursday edition of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee, streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch as well. Hope everybody is doing well. We've got a loaded show for you here today. Lots to talk about the Titans to get into. We'll begin the show doing that. John Hines, Predators head coach, will drop by at 7:30. We'll look ahead to the game tonight for the Predators against the Detroit Red Wings and revisit with John Hines the hot streak that the fellows are on as well. Hal Gill dropping by at 9:30 as well. Preds radio analyst, so a lot to come here today on the show. Also, Preds Pick to Click, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, coming up at 8:45. Ryan Porth on a hot streak in Preds Pick to Click. So we'll see if he can continue the role today. He looks very confident.
Hot streak of one.
That's right.
Your first one in how long?
At least 2 months.
Really?
It's been a long time.
You get one real early?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been a while. Yeah.
You're on a streak, man.
It wasn't as long as Robbie's drought, but, you know.
I think it might have been.
No.
It's pretty close.
No. I mean, your drought was like 3 months.
Was the whole time, I guess. But
That's true. Joe Rex are looking real nice today, man.
Yeah.
If you're watching this on the stream right now, there is a clear fashion difference between Robbie Stanley and Joe Rex Road today.
Yeah, I have to go to my wife's office today and sign some documents. This is for, like, you know, a condo that we bought in Michigan like almost 20 years ago that we're selling.
So nice.
If I'm going to my wife's office, I should wear, you know, like a shirt, right?
Yeah, probably so.
Look presentable.
Probably a good call.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I could have worn the Beastie Boys t-shirt that I had on. Actually, the funny thing is I thought it was yesterday, so I texted her yesterday during the show. I said, please bring me like a shirt, because I forgot. And she's like, yeah, it's tomorrow, man. Oh, okay.
Right. Hey, at least it was on your radar. I mean, yeah. There are times where events like this happen for me, nothing. Like, my wife will text me like, hey, you know, where are you? I'm like, oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Supposed to be there.
So, oh, I've been
good
there.
Good for you.
Yeah. Thanks. The in-laws bought me this shirt. It's kind of nice.
Looking very good. Joe Rexrode, a fine-looking man today here on the program. Joe, we've talked a lot about the Titans over the course of the last couple of weeks, and this week the conversation has largely been centered around the coaching staff. Now, we talked yesterday, Jim Schwartz added to the staff as a senior defensive assistant, and what exactly does that mean as you look forward to the defense here with Shane Bowen and all the different moving parts that seem to be there for this defense, and the ongoing story that is Mike Vrabel and the way that he's handled this. And some of this conversation goes back to Mike Vrabel and Dean Pease. And if you remember this time, I don't know, 3-4 weeks ago, Wesley Woodyard went on our midday show here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, Darren Donica Chase, and talked about, you know, what he saw out of Vrabel and Dean Pease, and talked about the Ravens playoff game, and that was a very eye-opening interview, and we spent a lot of the next day talking about that as to how that relates to Vrabel, his relationship with Dean Pease, and how he has handled the defensive coordinator position ever since that time. And now some more fuel added to that yesterday, I guess, is when the new Bussin' with the Boys podcast came out with Taylor Lewan, Will Compton, and Arthur Smith a part of this as well. So there's a lot to unpack here when we have this conversation. Let's start by replaying the comments from Wesley Woodyard, former Titans linebacker, from Darren Donica Chase this time last month about Vrabel, the defensive coordinator saga with Dean Pease, and everything that kind of led to the discussion that we've been having all week long. Here's what Wesley Woodyard had to say on Darren Donica Chase a few weeks ago.
Vrabel wanted to be the guy that was calling the defensive plays, and Coach Pease was very well at proving himself. He's already proved himself. He's already been through this. So when it comes to why should I loosen up my play calling ability just so you can make play calls? Like, I'm going to be a great defensive coordinator no matter what. I don't need you stepping on my toes. And you can kind of see a little bit of that head, those heads bumping during the games last year, and well, 2 years ago, I should say. And you could kind of see that uncomfortableness, you know, with Coach Pease. And it was a shock to everybody because Coach Pease, he coached Vrabel. So you automatically think that, all right, you brought me out of retirement. I'm going to retire with you on top. We're going to go win some Super Bowls. We're going to be the most dominant defense we can. And I'm going to sell off into the sunset and enjoy my retirement. But unfortunately, that wasn't the case.
So that was Wesley Woodyard talking about Dean Pease and used the word uncomfortableness in regards to the way that that kind of transpired between he and Vrabel heading into the AFC title game. And we spent a lot of time, Joe, talking about, okay, what does that mean? Like, what does that mean between the relationship between Mike Vrabel and Dean Pease? Did Dean Pease really want to, quote-unquote, retire, or was he just ready to get out from underneath, you know, Mike Vrabel? Did Mike Vrabel want to move on from Dean Pease? I mean, it led to a ton of discussion the next day. And then another element added to that story on the Bussin' with the Boys podcast, Arthur Smith joining the show with Taylor Lewan and Will Compton, and was asked directly about Dean Pease and how he got him to come down to Atlanta. Here's what former Titans offensive coordinator Arthur Smith had to say.
Oh, Dean Pease was retired. He's kind of sniped from us, too.
I read an article that says you brought Dean Pease out of retirement. This is for the second time because he was retired.
He was retired. I'm going to retire from the Titans.
He's like the Brett Favre of NFL coaches. He's retiring and coming back.
Yeah.
How'd you get Dean back?
One phone call?
No, he reached out to me.
He reached out to you?
Yeah.
I like that. Okay, keep going.
He said retirement's not for me. And so when I started going through the interviews, before I went on the interviews, I called him up and said, hey, this is what you really want to do? He said, yeah, absolutely. So it was nice because that is a – you're going to be a first-time head coach and gonna call plays. You need somebody experienced on that side.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
So that was a huge hire for us.
Dude, how great is he, man?
Oh, he's best. Yeah, no, I feel really fortunate. Because it alleviates a lot of headaches you're going to have early on. There's so much trust that he's got things covered on that side of the ball. Man, we meet every day or where we go over stuff, but Dean's the best. Like, you don't feel like you have to micromanage anything that's going on over there.
So, Joe, when you hear that Arthur Smith says that Dean Pease reached out directly to him and talked about the job and said retirement's not for him, does that make you feel any differently between or about the Vrabel and Pease situation that Wesley Woodyard talked about? Do you think it's becoming clearer that maybe the relationship at the end between Vrabel and Pease wasn't all that good? Or are people making way too much of this, in your opinion? How would you go about answering that?
Yeah, that one, that doesn't really maybe I'm not thinking of something here, but that doesn't really get my antenna up. I mean, so basically the fact that Pease reached out, that's the thing that people are
– right, and not – I guess wanting to come back to the Titans, reaching out directly to Smith, wanting to go to the Falcons.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about some of this stuff. I mean, I've been told that he got offered a non-coordinator job here,
right?
So, you know, if he's going to come out of retirement, then I don't see him doing that for anything. But maybe the role that he was offered here, maybe is it the role that Jim Schwartz has now?
Could be.
I mean, but I don't. Like, I wouldn't expect Dean Pease to come out of retirement for that role. And I don't – honestly, I don't blame Vrabel for not immediately saying, hey, actually, please come back and be our DC now. You know? I mean, it's not that Dean Pease isn't the best DC you could possibly have of the pool of candidates, but I get why you wouldn't want to do that. So I don't know that this necessarily relates to all the stuff about, like, what Woodyard was talking about. I think it can all still be, okay, Vrabel, you know, Pease retired. He went home. I mean, he made it clear, you know, he talked to Gentry Esses from the Tennessee, and he made it clear he was antsy. He wanted to get back into it.
Yeah.
And this happens a lot. I've been told that, you know, like he and Vrabel still had a good relationship last year and talked during the year. Not really football, but like still have a, you know, like a relationship. Vrabel apparently offered him some kind of role, maybe this Schwartz role. So the fact that he reached out to Arthur Smith, I mean, I guess I look at it like, hey, I'd like to be a D coordinator. If I'm coming back to football, I'm going to be a defensive coordinator. What, I mean, why would Dean Pease, like, I guess you could say, hey, why not come back for something? But like, if you had the choice of being a D coordinator somewhere, even if you're the one who reached out, or coming back here and kind of still looking over Shane Bowen's shoulder, but not being the D coordinator. But, like, I think this is even the short situation. Like, it would be way more. One, if it went well, then it would be like, oh, well, Dean came here and held your hand. But also, you're not the D coordinator, and why would you want to even be in that position? You know, I don't necessarily think this adds up to that.
Oh, I agree with that. But if I'm a Titans fan, I hear that and say, okay, if you're Vrabel and you know that your relationship with Pease is still good, and you know that he wants to be a defensive coordinator, well, why did you just not make him the defensive coordinator? I mean, it obviously didn't go well with the defense last year. And at that point, you had not officially given the title yet to Shane Bowen. It would have been easy to just be like, all right, Dean Pease is coming out of retirement. Here he is. Here's the defensive coordinator spot. I would hear that if I'm a Titans fan from what Arthur Smith was talking about there on the Bustin' with the Boys podcast. And if I'm a Titans fan, I'm looking at Vrabel saying, all right, well, why didn't you just make him the defensive coordinator?
Yeah, well, my speculation on that, because I don't know, but my speculation is, well, the guy just retired. So now you're going to come back and, hey, be the DC, and then you're going to retire next year?
Yeah.
I mean, if I'm Mike Vrabel, I want to be here many years, and I'd like to set something up where I can have continuity. I keep losing coordinators on the offensive side because they do well, and now Dean Pease is retired for a second time. So when's the third retirement? I don't blame him for not being like, you know what, let's go ahead and move forward.
But do you think Pease is really going to Atlanta for just 1 year? Like, if he
I don't know. I don't know.
What Robbie just said is how I interpreted what Arthur Smith said right there, and that he was seeking out a job. Mm-hmm. Like, he sees an opportunity. He sees someone that he knows well in Arthur Smith get a job. He seeks out the DC job, and it's like, well, why isn't he staying here to be the Titans defensive coordinator?
Yeah, but again, then don't retire last year.
And then it brings up questions in my mind of why did he retire?
Okay.
Well, why did Dean Pease retire? Did he retire because he was burnt out and thought that he was done and then now wants to get back in again for a second time? Or did he retire because he felt like Mike Vrabel was being a control freak with the defense and said, I'm out. I am just exiting this situation?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great question. And I think I also wonder if it's just as simple as he retired, he thought he was done, COVID-19 happened, and he just got bored out of his mind sitting at home. Like, there's a lot that kind of factors into this discussion, I think.
Of doing this for a long time, if there's a coach who I would take at face value over Dean Pease, I don't know, there'd be very few. And, I mean, that when that guy retired, that to me was not a guy who was like, God, I hate Vrabel. But I'll tell you guys, the press release, I want to retire. I mean, it was pretty heartfelt. I think it was a genuine retirement. Now, I'm not saying that nothing happened and that there wasn't some friction. But, I mean, if the friction was that bad, does Dean Pease come here and sit in the third row last year for a game and stuff? And
probably not.
I mean, I'm sure there's some truth to what Woodyard said, at least like in terms of in-game fighting or whatever. But I can't get there with this whole thing. I think that it's what you just said, Robbie. He retired. Look, I don't know on the P side. I don't know for sure. But on the Vrabel side, I think it's very easy to explain why you wouldn't say, please come back and be DC. One, he just retired. For whatever reason, like, I can't keep doing this. Two, you just have brought Shane Bowen in, did what you did, I think, to try to keep some pressure off him, gave him that opportunity, and so now you're going to say, hey, Shane, yeah, thanks, but
right.
let's come on, bring this guy back in. And I think there's some ego to this, too. It's also Vrabel's defense, and so it would be Vrabel also admitting that he can't handle it, probably to some extent.
I'm sure
there's some of it.
Not just Vrabel's defense, but his entire operation. It's Vrabel's operation.
Yeah.
Man, I will agree with you to an extent, Joe, that this could be something of a mentality of you're either in or you're out. Like, you can't just retire and then unretire. You know, I've had people working here before who leave for another job and then they want to come back and then they want to leave for another job. It's like, all right, you're either in or you're out. Like, not going to keep doing this. Right. So there could be very much so some of that mentality from Vrabel as well.
Well, it could just be he's got a really strong belief in Shane Bowen. I mean, obviously he does. He's got a really strong belief in Shane Bowen. And, you know, Titans fans don't want to hear that, and they hate talking about that, and they are very skeptical of what this is going to look like with Shane Bowen. But I think it's pretty clear at this point Mike Vrabel believes in Shane Bowen. Otherwise, why would he continue to put himself in this situation?
Yeah, and again, I think wants to have some continuity there, probably. If Shane Bowen is what he thinks he is, then he'd like something to last for a few years in a row. I don't know. I mean, look, what Wesley said is it's an eye-opener. And really, it demands some following up. And, you know, like at some point here, like, okay, really, like there's got to be some more, frankly, some reporting on our end that helps tell this story a little bit better. But I don't take what Arthur Smith said yesterday as some bombshell. I mean, I think Dean Pease clearly is a guy who, like a lot of football guys, struggles with, okay, it's time to get to the grandkids, and then it's like, oh, my God, I miss football. Yeah. I think that's fundamentally what this is. And if I'm him coming back, I'm not coming back to – like Jim Schwartz is, what, 54?
Yep.
You know, he's going to come back into the game and at some point and be a DC. I mean, Dean Pease is at the end.
He's 71.
If he's going to do it, he's going to do the job.
We are off and running here today on Robbie and Rex Road, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We'll continue the discussion on the Titans when we come back. What would we consider to be a success for offensive coordinator Todd Downing in year one? We'll discuss it next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
This hour of Robbie and Rex Road is brought to you by Trane. Get a great deal this spring on a new Trane heating and cooling system. At Trane, they test so it runs. Visit traneinfo.com to find your local dealer and learn more. It's hard to stop a Trane.
Tune in later on in the show as we reveal a keyword for you to text into the game line for your chance to win the T-Mobile Hockey Homegate Giveaway. A Dos Equis prize pack, including a case of beer, dessert from Nothing But Cakes, a T-Mobile prize pack, and food provided by 312 Pizza Company in Germantown. We'll have that opportunity coming up for you a little bit later here in the show. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porter with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And Joe, we spent a lot of time talking about the defensive coordinator spot, that side of the ball in particular, with how bad it was. They've made some additions on that side, some key subtractions as well, and now Shane Bowen officially holding the title as defensive coordinator. But there was another move made by the Titans at offensive coordinator. Arthur Smith out the door. He is now the head coach with the Atlanta Falcons, and they have promoted from within Todd Downing coming on board, and he will now be the offensive coordinator with the Titans. And it's not a very enviable situation to be in for Todd Downing. You're replacing a guy who just led this franchise and this offense to, I think, certainly the most explosive offense that we've seen since they've been in Nashville and arguably throughout the entire history of their franchise. Now, you've still got some good pieces. You've got Tannehill coming back. You've got Derrick Henry. You've got A.J. Brown. But you've lost Jonnu Smith. You've lost Dennis Kelly. You've lost Corey Davis as well. So this is going to be a different-looking offense to some degree. And there's already a high standard anyway. So I ask you, as you look at the situation now unfolding before Todd Downing, what do you think should be considered a success in year one, knowing going into it that the expectations for that offense are going to be very, very high?
Well, I think the overall production needs to be close. Now, you know, if the defense is better and this team can still win without having to get to 30 points a game, then it helps him. You know, I mean, it's, winning still ultimately helps you. I mean, like, if the Titans were good on offense and a little bit subpar on defense last year and went 11-5, you know, then it wouldn't have become what it did. But they were bad. They were terrible. So the offense had to be great. I mean, you'd like the offense to be great again. Is that realistic when you lose Corey Davis, when you lose Jonnu Smith, you say goodbye to your right tackle and you don't know where that is? I don't know. I think you still have the trio of players who I think is comparable to a lot of teams around this league. I mean, how many teams have a trio of QB running back receiver like Tannehill, Henry, Brown?
Not many.
And it's a pretty short list. So, I mean, if it goes down a little bit, I think reasonably you can look at that as, okay, that's what happens in this league. You know, defenses adjust to what you're doing. You lost some people. I mean, that's okay. And plus, Arthur Smith was – there's a reason he's a head coach right now. I mean, you were following up someone who was really good at his job. So I think you can go down a little bit and be okay, and people aren't going to freak out. Now, if it you have a clunker in there early, you know, where you score 13 or something,
yeah,
you know, then you're going to get – one, you're going to get, like, the Raiders fans coming out of the woodwork saying, I told you so, and – you know, it'll be rougher for him. So just don't have those clunkers. But, I mean, I think specifically you got to be able to obviously figure out the rest of your receiving core. Who's your starting tight end? Are you going to get Darrington Evans involved and let him add an element to the offense? I think that's one of the exciting things for Todd Downing is if you have him healthy in year two, you may be able to do some things that they just couldn't do last year. There's no reason the running game should suffer. I'm not saying Derrick Henry's going to run for 2K again, but the running game is mostly in place there, right? All the pieces. Arthur Smith, I thought, was amazing at making everything look the same, which, again, that's their system. They should be able to replicate that. And then just having a good feel for keeping defenses off balance. Not in every game. There were times when maybe he ran too much on first down or, you know, was maybe a little bit predictable. But for the most part, he kept defenses off balance, which I think is one of the big things about being an OC.
What was it last year? There was a time where if it was 2nd and 10, you could pretty much guarantee they're running again with Derrick Henry.
That's right. Yeah. That's it. Yeah. 2nd and long, they were going to run the ball
yeah.
and make it at least 3rd and 6, you know. So, yeah, it got a little predictable. But I think overall, I mean, again, OC is the easiest job in sports to – know what the person is doing.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, we all see what he does. You can't really, you know, you can see what a defensive play caller is doing, you know, but that's still reacting to the offense and making plays. I mean, the offensive coordinator, every single thing he does on a work day, we know what it is. And so anything that doesn't work, he screwed up. But, yeah, I mean, Arthur Smith got a little predictable in those situations. I didn't think he had a great day against the Ravens. His last day was not a great day. But overall, man, it's a tough act to follow.
Yeah, overall, I mean, you've got some big shoes to fill if you're Todd Downing. And I think you brought up something there that I think we recognized at the time, but I'm interested to see whether or not we really took that for granted with Arthur Smith being here, and that is just the feel for the game and when to make certain calls. You're never going to get it perfectly if you're an offensive coordinator, and there are going to be times where you've made the wrong call and you've gone the wrong direction. But by and large, I thought Arthur Smith was phenomenal at knowing when to break out certain plays, whether it's a trick play, whether it's a toss sweep to Jonnu Smith, or just running the ball right up the middle in a wildcat. Like it was really amazing at times how good he was at keeping the defense off balance. That's the job of every offensive coordinator. Some do it much better than others. And that's in that respect, that's a really tough act to follow if I've Todd Downing. Like, I don't know if you're a Titans fan, if you can realistically expect it to be any better than Arthur Smith was last year.
Right. Now, Arthur Smith's predecessor did not have the same level of success, but it started to get there once Derrick Henry became, like, the last month of that 18 season. All of a sudden, the Derrick Henry we know became that.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, their offense immediately got better because, I mean, those play action, you know, those play action plays off the outside zone where it's just such a weapon and it freezes the defense. And now, you know, a court like Tannehill, I mean, he has at times some big windows to throw in because of that stuff. So some of it is he just took advantage of having a great player and you know, just used that to his full advantage. But, yeah, I mean, he had a great feel, and I think a lot of that is also – it's game planning during a week, knowing what the defense is going to do. All the stuff that everybody has to do in this job, and some just have a feel for it and some don't. And when Arthur Smith got the job, it was like, okay, he's a very respected guy in the building. He's the tight ends love him. He's a good coach. But does he have this feel? Well, he did. Now, Todd Downing, Raiders fans will say he does not have this feel. We'll see. You know, it will be, again, as much talk about Shane Bowen as there is. I mean, I think the Todd Downing situation is really, really interesting, and it's a great opportunity for him to get back to have this 4 years later. But it's also, it's not like you're taking over a downtrodden offense and you can be the hero. You just have to not screw it up, and that's tough.
Coming up next, we'll continue the conversation on the Titans and get your thoughts on Todd Downing as well. Let us know on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. What would you consider to be a success for Todd Downing as offensive coordinator in year one? You can let us know on our text line. When we come back, I'll tell you why I think there's one huge obstacle that he's going to have that could limit that success. We'll do that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Talking Titans, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. So, Joe, we've talked about Todd Downing and outlining what we think could be a successful first season for him as offensive coordinator for the Titans. There is one gigantic obstacle, though, that I still believe is in his way, and that is, what in the world are they going to do at tight end? Because Jonnu Smith, as much as we've talked about how he got taken out of the passing game because of injuries last year, I think it's pretty clear how important he was to this group, and that's a massive loss. If you're Todd Downing, you feel good about Ferkser being in there. I think you feel good about Jeff Swain being in there as well. And obviously, he's got a lot of familiarity with those guys being their coach. But there's still a pretty gigantic hole at tight end that you're going to have to figure out, whether that's in the draft or maybe just Anthony Ferkser. You've got a lot of faith that he's going to become your number one tight end. But to me, as much as we've talked about losing Corey Davis, and you've got Josh Reynolds coming into the fold as well, which is a weapon that I'm very intrigued to see what happens there. Right now there's a gigantic hole at tight end, and if I'm Todd Downing, that's a pretty big concern to me at this point moving into this season.
Yeah. I mean, the more I think about those top 100 picks, and my mock had them taking a tight end, but the more I feel like, gosh, that's got to be one of them, right?
You would think so.
Although I also look at Mykole Pruitt, who I don't believe has been signed by anyone, and to me, you could do a lot worse. And I don't know, like, his injury situation, but if he's healthy, I feel like you could do a lot worse than having, you know, a Pruitt, Swaim, Ferkser, rookie you can bring along situation. I don't think that'd be bad. I mean, right now, you could look at, like, Jeff Swaim as your inline blocking tight end. You could look at him as tight end one. I just don't look at Ferkser and won't look at Ferkser as that exactly. Maybe we're underestimating Ferkser as a blocker, but I think that he's a specialist. But maybe there's somebody. I mean, it is a very good, it's a good tight end draft. It's, you know, obviously if you keep Pitts as part of that, he's maybe generational.
Yeah.
But even if you take him out, there are a lot of, you know, there are a lot of good players. I've talked about Pat Freiermuth. I mean, Hunter Long, it's an interesting situation with him, you know, Boston College. Obviously, you're talking about Vrabel's son's teammate. We know the Titans have gone to Boston College before for players. You know, he's a guy who some people are really, really high on him. Our guy Dane Brugler came out with the Beast yesterday. For anybody who it's the most exhaustive. I'm exhausted reading it. It's the most in-depth, like, player profile
you know
thing
that GIF
ever done, dude.
We're like, they've got all these formulas and symbols floating around, and you're just like staring off. That's what I think of.
Like it's like the 48th ranked cornerback. It's hours and hours spent on.
It's a lot.
But anyway, you know, it's a great guide, and I mean, Hunter Long is a guy who, you know, has a lot of ability. So maybe there's somebody like that, a Pat Freiermuth, Trimble from Notre Dame, who they've feel like can come right in. I mean, I went with Brevin Jordan, the Miami tight end. The Titans were at Pro Day for Miami. Of course, they have edge rushers too of interest. They had a very high interest pro day. But I think it's, I mean, my guess right now is it's Swaim, it's Firkser, and, you know, they got some guys like Parker Hesse and those guys. But I mean, then it's going to be a rookie with a prominent role, just like it's going to be a rookie corner with a prominent role and a rookie edge, I think, with as the number three. You know, big draft.
By the way, Dane Brugler will be joining the show next week.
Very nice.
Awesome. Gosh, I hope he naps between now and then. That thing came out the other day, and it's incredible every year.
Dane, take a break. Go to sleep.
Yeah, rest up for the show, buddy.
Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. JP from Spring Hill texts in, I think one of the most important things is keeping our red zone offense as good and as consistent as it's been the last couple of years. That is a great point by JP. They have been phenomenal in the red zone. That's got to continue. Ryan Tannehill, I think, deserves a lot of credit for that, but Arthur Smith as well. I mean, you've got weapons like Derrick Henry and Tannehill and A.J. Brown. And look, Jonnu Smith, a big part of that too. You can do a lot of damage in the red zone. That's got to be a big part of their success. Like, you think about really good red zone offenses. The Titans were right near the top of the league. The Packers are at the top of the league. The Chiefs as well. Like, some of these teams are at the top of the standings. Red zone offense is a pretty important stat to that.
I mean, I think you start with Tannehill there. I still think that's the most important factor. A quarterback who makes quick decisions and, you know, gets the ball in there now. You know, I mean, he did that great, but Jonnu Smith, yes, a weapon. Corey Davis, I think they could have used him more as a weapon in the red zone, but still, those two guys together, those are both good red zone weapons. And I don't know, is Josh Reynolds a guy? I mean, I think if there's a difference between Davis and Reynolds, from what I've seen of Josh Reynolds, I mean, he's not quite the physical presence of a Davis, maybe not quite as good at going to get a ball, you know, on a fade in the end zone or something like that. So they're going to figure that out for sure. But it also helps to have Derrick Henry. And this
he's
is
not bad.
It helps in the red zone to have that threat. But yeah, that's a great point, and that's where Downing will also be tested for sure.
Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Logan texts in, Todd Downing to get them to the playoffs and win at least one game would be successful in my book. So evaluating Todd Downing, if you can get to the playoffs, you can win a game, and that means your offense more than likely is humming along pretty well. That would be a success in Logan's book.
What if they get to the playoffs, win a game, and they're winning every week, 17-14?
Just a complete shift from last year. Maybe so.
I mean, people wouldn't be happy with Downing, would they?
They would not. It'd be the same conversation that we were having last year. Just flip it around from Shane Bowen to Todd Downing. We'd be talking about how great Shane Bowen was.
About to say. I mean, Shane Bowen would be the next coming of Dean Pease at that point.
Yeah,
exactly. Everybody would be all excited that Dean Pease didn't get offered to come back as DC again.
Well, and I do feel bad not to get off on a tangent here, but like that Atlanta defense has no players whatsoever. So Dean Pease is probably not going to look all that great this year.
Or
he's going to look amazing.
Exactly.
Yes. There's no in between, I don't think.
Yeah, well, maybe they need to. They got a chance here to trade out of where they are and load up. But yeah, he's not taking over. He definitely took over a much better situation here than he's taken over there.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm glad JP brought up that point about the red zone offense, because that goes back to the feel we were talking about. It sounds easy. Like, once you get closer to the end zone, that your offense should be able to keep humming along, but you're dealing with a whole lot less real estate out there. I mean, your routes are much more difficult to run because you just don't have as much room. So I think that's where the feel for the game is probably more important. If you're an offensive coordinator, is in the red zone. Arthur Smith was awesome at that. Can Todd Downing continue that? And how much freedom do you give Ryan Tannehill too? Like, I mean, I think Tannehill, you're comfortable with him enough at this point. I mean, if he wants to check into something, he checks into something. I mean, I think Tannehill is a big part of this, too, in terms of making decisions at the line of scrimmage and giving you the best possible matchup in the red zone as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, going back, you know, my Mariota, I remember one year he was like flat out the best QB.
He
was incredible, actually, that one year in the red zone. But, yeah, I mean, anybody can move it between the 20s. In theory, it's a lot easier to move it between the 20s. Like, do you get touchdowns in that area? Titans have been extremely good at that. So if it falls off, there's an easy person to blame.
When we come back, we'll continue the discussion on the Titans. Got more of your text to get to on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We'll do that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee, streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch as well. Talking Titans, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Now, Joe, we talked about the tight end position in the last segment, how there's still a pretty glaring hole there for the Titans as they head into the NFL draft. Eric on the text line says, what about Jared Pinkney? What sort of a role could he have with the Titans? And he's an interesting guy to me, Joe, because I remember, I guess it was his junior season at Vanderbilt, there was talk about him being, you know, one of the top tight ends in the draft if he were to come out that year. Now, he elects to stay and does not have a very good season the year after that. Vanderbilt as a whole did not have a good season the year after that. And it kind of feels like he became either an afterthought in the draft or maybe was just overly hyped in the draft to begin with. But Pinkney still, I guess, an intriguing guy in terms of the athleticism that he brings to the table. What do you think about that with the Titans?
Yeah, I mean, some people look at that situation and say, oh, Vanderbilt screwed him over. Well, no, what that means is that sometimes, you know, these things are a little early and people haven't really been able to evaluate a player fully. And yep. Then when they do, I mean, it's not like Pinkney was actually going to be the one or two if he went through the whole process. That was a media thing. But I agree, he's pretty talented, and it's my bad for not thinking about him earlier. He should be considered in the mix of guys with a chance. You know, he was with Atlanta, didn't work out. I mean, I think he's got good size. I think a big key for him is, can he be a difference maker as an inline blocker? You know, I mean, that's his ticket to staying in this league, and if he is improving there and is good for the Titans with this offense, then I think he's got a chance to be on the team. I don't know that he's going to be a big, big answer to the whole thing, but again, players are allowed to improve in this league.
Yeah, absolutely, and he is an intriguing guy, like, in terms of his athleticism. I mean, a guy that can catch the ball, can do some damage after the catch as well. To your point, I mean, I think you feel okay about that right now with Firkser, and depending on where they go in the draft, like, they're going to draft a tight end at some point. I don't know exactly when it's going to be. What style of tight end do they draft? I mean, they're all different types. There are some that can come in and they can be your inline tight end right away and they can block really well, but they're probably not bringing much to the table in terms of the passing game. Like, how do you go about weighing that if you're John Robinson and the Titans? That's going to be very interesting to me because, I mean, you do have Firkser, and I think you feel good about what he brings to the table receiving-wise, and you're going to need some weapons over the middle. With Humphreys gone, now with Jonnu Smith gone as well, like, Firkser is going to be a big part of what they do over the middle. I think Darrington Evans could be as well. But how do you go about evaluating that if you're the Titans? Like, if you've got a tight end on the table in the third round that you feel really good about being a blocker, but you think may take a while to be an impact player in the passing game, do you take him? Like, is that something you do in the third round? I'm fascinated to see how the Titans handle that because, sure, you'd like to have a guy that could come in and do both really well immediately, but that's hard to find. I mean, even with Jonnu Smith, it took some time for him to be able to sit there and develop and become the blocker that he eventually became. And then he became, I think, one of the most gifted players on the offense. I think he's going to do really well in New England. I am fascinated to see how the Titans go about handling the stylistic point of the tight end that I think they inevitably end up drafting.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of look at it like with Elly Tolvanen, he wasn't ready in a lot of ways, but you knew the skill, yep. Right? And so eventually the other stuff caught up, but you can't teach the thing he does better than most people.
Right.
So I would opt for, and I think that's what they did with Jonnu Smith. He was an elite offensive weapon in college, and they brought him along, and then eventually becomes an all-around better player. To me, like, if you, not that a good blocker can't learn to be a good receiver, but I'd rather have someone who I know can be a difference maker in the passing game as long as they have the physical profile necessary and then work on that stuff.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. CD texts in, says, bringing in Jim Schwartz as defensive assistant to me would be like bringing in Chip Kelly as an offensive assistant. I don't know if that's a shot at Jim Schwartz or if he just really likes Chip Kelly.
Yeah, I need more explanation on that. I need more.
My guess is not a big fan of Chip Kelly.
Yeah.
So maybe not a big fan of Jim Schwartz.
Is that like a system reference too? Because, you know, Chip Kelly is known for his system, which used to be cutting edge and isn't anymore. The Schwartz thing is interesting from a system perspective, and I have no idea if this is any reference at all to that text, but I mean, it is a different system.
Yeah.
You know, so what does that matter? I mean, you know, everybody says they want to be multiple. So there's probably a lot of things that he would do that you would do that are similar. But, I mean, I think it's pretty clear that Vrabel believes in the defense that he runs.
Yeah.
And this is not the defense that Jim Schwartz has run forever and ever.
Forth, what do you think of the Jim Schwartz move? Do you find it weird that he's in here in this role? How do you go about kind of approaching the thought process here from Mike Vrabel and the Titans?
I think the Jim Schwartz move was very curious. Because for the one of the points that you guys have brought up the last couple of days, the fact that Schwartz has always run a 4-3, and that is not the Titans' defense that they run. Like, they run a 3-4. So that's curious. He's not a Vrabel guy, which almost every other either player addition or coach addition feels like that person has been a Vrabel guy.
Or at least connected in some way.
Yeah. So it's just very curious to me. I mean, I know Schwartz lives here and his family has been living here. So maybe it's just the convenience of him living here and you've got someone who's been in the NFL for a long time and has had success. He won a Super Bowl with the Eagles as DC. Maybe it's just as simple as that. But I guess, you know, from a schematic standpoint, I did find it to be pretty interesting. And I don't really know how much impact he's really going to make because nobody really knows what his role truly is.
Yeah.
He is a Belichick guy.
Yeah.
Going way back. But, yeah. They share that. Yeah, I mean, well, when Schwartz stepped back, I mean, I know a lot of coaches, we just talked about DMPs earlier, he talked about, like, his kids and his time of his life, right?
Right.
So, I mean, I think you're onto something on Nashville and everything. I mean, from his perspective, he can still be an asset and still be involved and have his, you know, be in the game, but then not have to do the DC head coach grind that he's been on or whatever. I mean, a position coach grind. I mean, he was a personnel scout with the Browns in the 90s. Again, that's his Belichick link. And so we're talking 25 straight years of being on that coaching staff grind. And so can he be an asset to the Titans and not be on that? And doesn't matter that it's not his system? He still has thoughts about individual players. You know, I mean, that would make sense from his perspective. How much does it help the Titans? I don't know.
Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a texture that says, go watch the film on Tommy Tremble from Notre Dame.
Yeah.
He is the perfect tight end fit for the Titans.
Well, no, I mean, I like him. We've talked about him before.
Yep.
He's a bruiser. He is and he has some ability, you know, to cut. I mean, it's not like he's just a glorified offensive tackle.
Right.
So, no, I agree. I think he would fit for sure. I mentioned Hunter Long. I mean, Pat Freiermuth, I don't know. That might be a little bit too rich for the Titans' blood based on other needs. But if they love one of these guys, again, you could always go best available and go higher for a tight end than we all think they're going to go, and you can still get a corner and a receiver and an edge, I think.
You think so?
Well, you can get them. I mean, I think you can get good ones still. But, I mean, really, I mean, maybe they love, like, Pat Freiermuth so much they take him at 22. That seems like a reach, but I'm just saying, if it's big board and best available, it could be all over the map.
If they take Pat Freiermuth at 22, I'm going to lose my mind.
Really?
You better trade back.
Yeah.
If you're going to have Freiermuth as your first pick.
Well, and you probably could. I love the idea of trading back.
I love the idea of Ryan Porth losing his mind. I'm now rooting for Pat Freiermuth to be taken in the first round.
I will lose my mind if he's 22.
Wow.
Maybe he was about to go at 23, and they had intel.
Well, then, whoever's at 23, you know, congrats to them.
But see, this, but see, this is also, though, we see we get into mock draft world. We all do it.
Oh, yeah.
And then it's like, and every draft.
I'm deep into it, man.
Right. But every draft, there are picks that are like, huh? And it's like, so you're shocked because we all sat here reading mock drafts for weeks and this is not what the mock draft said?
Yeah. Who knows?
They aren't gospel.
Whenever I watched Penn State, I did not think, oh, Pat Freiermuth, that is a first-round tight end.
Oh, I liked him a lot. I don't know about first round.
Good player.
Yeah.
I mean, Brevin Jordan at Miami was a good player, but Brevin Jordan is, you know, probably a day two pick.
I mean, yeah. The draft can change in an instant. Who knows? Maybe another Laramie Tunsil situation happens. Somebody gets on TV smoking a bong, and all of a sudden they slide in the draft. It could happen.
Could be. Maybe they rise in the draft.
You talk about reality TV. I mean, come on.
Yeah, that was good stuff.
That was an interesting night.
Yes, it was.
That was my first night at Titans headquarters. And we're all sitting there watching Tunsil with the gas mask. Like, wow, what a draft.
Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Andrew from Dover texts in, the Titans give Shane Bowen 3 to 4 games to prove himself, and if he doesn't, they fire him and give the job to Jim Schwartz. What do you think about that? 3 games in, if he's not got that defense turned around, Jim Schwartz? You're coming in there, baby.
Yeah.
Your defense.
I understand the sentiment. Like, I understand why people would look at this and say, I don't know.
Maybe so.
I feel like, based on Jim Schwartz, what he said, all the factors, it seems more like he actually is, like, wanting to be a consultant and then get back into it at some point. Maybe he's here to stage a coup. I don't know.
I don't think so.
Okay. I don't think so. Right. But you know what? I'm not surprised that people would go there, and that's what you invite when you make a move like this.
How many coordinators over the years have you seen, though, switch their own scheme from a 4-3 to a 3-4 or vice versa?
Well, right, exactly.
Like what Schwartz would have to do in that instance.
That's exactly right. I mean, that's one of the I don't know if it makes it a non-starter, but you got to keep that in mind when you think about that. So Schwartz is just going to come in and it's his defense now or is it Vrabel's defense now?
Yeah.
They are different.
And you can't just blow that up in the middle of the season and start, hey, guys, we've been running a 3-4 the whole time, but we're going to switch right now in week 5.
Now, I'm sure, like, you know, a career coach who's been a head coach who's a smart guy like Jim Schwartz, I'm sure he
probably
could, like, figure out, you know, running Vrabel's defense.
Probably.
Like it's a 3-4 or a 4-3. Like sometimes we forget, like, it's 11 dudes on a field.
Yes.
You know, like there's only so much you can do. This is not calculus, but it still is interesting. It would be a change for him.
When we come back, we will get into the Nashville Predators back in action tonight, and they've got a red hot goaltender in UC Soros. How much do you believe this turnaround for UC Soros is real? We'll discuss that. Coming up next, this is Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.